Hey, everybody. Welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today, I am speaking with my friend, Danielle Gagnon. Danielle is a search engine optimization specialist and copywriter who works with businesses to help them grow and be found and become optimized, I guess. Thank you so much for joining me today, Danielle.
Thank you. I love that description. I'm going to start using that on my website.
Let me help you get optimized.
It sounds like an 80s movie tagline or something.
It definitely could be.
So why don't you do a way better job of describing to everybody what you do?
Absolutely. So I think you did a pretty good job, actually. So I always describe it as really search engine optimization is just a way of writing and structuring a website that helps you naturally attract your ideal clients or your ideal customers, and just help you become the business that they find online. I think I always say, like, there are already people out there searching for exactly what it is that you do or exactly what it is that you sell, and SEO helps you find more of those people.
I just want to tie this in real quick because this is something much different than what I normally do. How can search engine optimization help not just like white collar businesses, but how can it help blue collar businesses, like body shops and, you know, carpenters and construction workers and that kind of thing? How can it help them to get found?
Absolutely. So those sorts of businesses are actually my favorite to work with because I actually think that SEO is like most powerful for them for many reasons. But one of those reasons being primarily when someone needs that type of service, unless they have a business that they've worked with in the past, where are they going to go to find someone? Maybe they'll ask their friends, but most likely they're going to go to Google and they're going to search for that sort of business in their area. And a lot of the time, I know when I need work done on my car, I don't know, I'll be honest up front, I don't know anything about cars. So I'm just Googling and I'm finding the business that pops up high on Google that has decent reviews and I'm going with them. And that's the case for a lot of those service-based businesses, especially ones that serve a local area. If you can get on that first page of Google, if you can get high up on that first page of Google and you can get some strong Google reviews, that can make such a profound difference for your business and just getting that like automatic lead generation through your website.
In my experience, it's almost like a miraculous kind of assistance. Like,
yeah.
So few people in, at least in the body shop space, especially in like the trucking space, like people in those businesses who are running those businesses generally aren't doing it. So once you start doing it, it automatically kind of pushes you to the absolute top.
Yeah, you're totally right. And that was another thing that I usually tell people is, especially with, you know, small service, local-based businesses like that, you're right. Most people are not thinking about SEO. And so if you do focus on SEO, you're going to have a much easier time getting to the top of those search results. And it just makes such a big difference. There's this joke in the SEO community that says, like, the best place to hide a dead body is on page 2 of Google, because literally no one ever goes there. And it's true. Like, I know I do this. And I think, you know, a lot of the people listening, if they think about their search habits, when you go to Google, if you don't find what you want on that first page, you're probably, what I do is I change my search query. I search for something slightly different. I don't click through to all the other pages on Google. I change my search query. And the vast majority of people do that. I was reading a stat just the other day that was like almost 90% of people are more likely to change their search query than go to the second page of Google.
I would actually go even a step farther. If it's not literally like the top 4 results, I think that I must have screwed up and I go back and change my search.
Exactly.
I've never seen the bottom of Google pages.
Right? And so, like, when you think about it that way, it just becomes clear how many leads you could be missing out on if you are not on that first page or not at the top of that first page. And then on the other side, once you do start focusing on it, if you get yourself to that point, how naturally those leads would come in without you having to do other work. Now, that's not to say you do SEO and you can forget about all the marketing. Of course, that's not true. But, you know, so many of the websites that people build are really just like a pretty face. When someone does find you through your social media or whatever, it looks nice and it answers their questions and it's all good. But your website can actually be doing a huge piece of your marketing for you when you focus on search engine optimization.
So, and I'm actually super guilty of that too, because even though like we are obviously all over Instagram and YouTube and Facebook, we do not do, I know we had a blog like website for a while, but I put it on freeze and then I've never gone back to it just because like it was under construction and then I don't know what happened, but I just got distracted. I should actually probably write that down. But yeah, no, we didn't have, or we just, that's not something that we've ever dealt with.
Yeah.
I don't really know where I was going with that. I don't remember. I just gave myself a chore and completely forgot like direction I was trying to take that in. But anyways, going back to what you do, so let's say someone comes to you and maybe they have like an antiquated website or a website that, you know, isn't really doing anything. What would be like the steps you would take to make that website better?
Yeah. So whenever I work with someone, the very first thing we do is like a 90-minute kickoff call, which sounds like a lot, but we talk in depth about their business, who, and primarily about who their ideal client or customer is. And a lot of times when we, and I always have to preface this with people and explain why I do it, because a lot of times people are like, why are we talking about this? Like, aren't you just going to do some stuff to my website and then it'll magically work better? but it doesn't exactly work that way. It really all comes down to really, really clearly knowing who your ideal client is, because who they are, the problems they have, their, you know, their motivations for your needing your service, why they might choose your business over a competitor, all of that really matters when it comes to figuring out the words and phrases that they might be using when they go to Google to search for a business or a service like yours. And so it can make a really big difference. Like, I'll just use a random example, thinking about auto body shops since I'm talking to you. You know, is your ideal client someone who, you know, just needs a mechanic for regular tune-ups and fixes and, you know, things like that when their car breaks down? Maybe there's someone like me who literally knows nothing about cars and is just like, I just want someone I can hand this off to and I can trust to fix it well. Or are they someone who's super into cars, who cares about like the really fine details, who wants custom jobs done to their cars? I mean, those are two completely different people, and they're going to be searching for completely different things online. And so it's really, really important to know who it is you're actually trying to reach before we do any other work. So that's always how it starts.
I think a lot of people, and guys, I know that, again, like, I just want to point out again, like, this is not my typical podcast, but the people that I typically find are listening or following me are business owners.
Mm-hmm.
This is important stuff. Like, there's literally three parts to a business. There's your product or service, there's sales, and there's marketing. That's it. That's literally every business can be broken down into those parts. So, like, if you are, like, most of the businesses that I see, you've literally let that marketing area kind of atrophy to almost non-existent. You know, I see people still using mailers or, you know, radio commercials or, you know, just ridiculous stuff. And even though, or even email, where even though they know that they don't open their email,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? They know that I literally take my mail out of my mailbox and throw it in the garbage.
Oh my gosh, me too, before I even get in the house.
Literally never even look at it. I literally take it and walk it over to the garbage can and throw it out. Yeah. Like, that's it. Because
same.
Everything is automatic or electronic. If anyone actually needs to get a hold of me, then they'll contact me through those means. those things don't work. But what Danielle's talking about does, I think a lot of people find it a little scary
or like different, you know, than what kind of is like the traditional thought. But going forward, it's going to become even more important to help your business stand out.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of businesses learned that lesson of just how important it is. You know, in March when everything started shutting down because of COVID, I mean, my business grew so much over this last year because so many people suddenly realized that they did not have a strong online presence and it was suddenly their only way to reach people. And I think it pushed a lot of businesses towards starting to look at all of this more closely and starting to realize just how important it is. And even when all of this craziness is over, it's still going to be, it's never going to not be important to have a good online presence ever again.
It's only going to keep getting more important. Like it used to be enough, marketing used to be enough that you could like sponsor the local baseball team.
Right.
And like that would get you your business, but it just doesn't work like that anymore. More and more businesses are starting to see that. And I think more and more businesses are coming to that realization and they're not sure what to do about it, right?
Yeah.
So, like, what are some steps that you would give someone to take that maybe has some of that realization, doesn't know where to start, and maybe isn't ready to, like, contact someone for help? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have sort of a 5-step system that I always recommend people do. And this is literally what I do with my clients. Of course, doing it yourself versus having, you know, me do it, it's more of a learning process for you, but it's something that anyone can learn how to do SEO. And I always want to make that clear to people. Of course, I, you know, don't want to put myself out of business by telling everybody to do it themselves, but it's true. Anybody can learn how to do this. I did not go to school for search engine optimization. I learned how to do this. I always say, like, I went to the University of New Hampshire for undergrad and YouTube for my master's degree. Because I just learned everything through videos and blogs and, you know, I have done some training programs and stuff as well, but I started with just free resources online. And anybody else can do that as well. When it comes to some simple steps you can take, starting with what I mentioned before, like what I always do with my clients is starting with making sure that you understand who it is that you're actually trying to reach. Don't try to reach every, you know, we'll use an out-of-body shop again. Don't try to reach every person with a car. Not all of those people are your people. You know your business and you know who your ideal client is. So take the time to really dig into that. Make sure you understand who that person is, what their problem is, why they might choose you over a competitor, things like what their concerns are, why, what their objections might be to working with you. All of those things are important to know. And then you need to do some actual keyword research. So a keyword is literally just a word or a phrase that you would use on your website. We all have words on our websites, right? But it's also a word or a phrase that someone would go and type into Google when they're searching for your business. And at the end of the day, the SEO really comes down to making sure that the content that you're creating matches the type of content that your ideal clients are looking for. So there are a bunch of tools out there that you can use to do keyword research to actually see what are people actually searching for. Most of them have free versions that are not always great, but I always like to recommend one called UberSuggest. It's UBER Suggest, and it has a pretty good free version. And you can just go and start typing in a word or phrase that you think people might be searching for, and it will give you actual data on how many people are searching for that, how competitive it is, so how many other businesses are trying to get on that first page of Google for that same keyword. And it's also going to give you other ideas of related keywords that you could start using on your site.
I don't want to interrupt you, but we actually did this not that long ago.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to suggest that people, like, don't just think about, like, it from your eyes. Like, you're the professional. Like, you know all the business terms. You know all of the terms that are in your kind of trade or whatever. Like, think of it from the outside. Like I typed in, like, one of the ones that just popped in my head was like, guys who can paint my truck.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like it's not necessarily going to be like commercial body shop, commercial fleet shop, commercial fleet paint, right? Like those things may not come to like your, or like someone outside of your industry's kind of mind, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's such a good point. And that's why I always recommend people start with really, you know, making sure they have a clear understanding of who their client is, because you're exactly right. I have a funny story that I like to tell that sort of illustrates that point. So I had a client last year who she is she does like colonics and colon cleanses. So fun, fun stuff.
Okay. I love where this story is going right now.
And she, her like official, you know, professional title, she called herself a colon hydrotherapist, and she called her services colon hydrotherapy. And she was like, I don't understand. Nobody's finding me. Like I've been doing this longer than anybody in my state, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, well, I gotta be honest. Like nobody knows what a colon hydrotherapist is. Like I've heard of a colon cleanse, I've heard of an enema, but I've never heard of colon hydrotherapy. And so
it sounds like some sort of expensive massage.
Yeah, right. It kind of is, but like for your inside. And so it took like a lot of convincing, because she was really proud of this like professional title, you know, and I totally understand that. And sometimes it can bring up these sort of weird conflicts of, do I describe my service the way I want to describe it, or do I describe it the way my ideal client is going to be describing it or looking for it? And so with her, I was able to convince her that we could call, when we were talking about her specifically and her title, we called her colon hydrotherapist. But otherwise, we used more general, common terms like colon cleanse or enema. And she now, in her state, is the number one Google ranking colon hydrotherapist website. So it paid off, and it's a good example of how a simple change like that can make a really big difference.
I would imagine that someone like that who has that kind of profession probably has gone through like so much to get people to take them seriously that really been like a painful thing for her to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it definitely was. And I really had to, you know, explain like, it's not taking anything away from your expertise. Like, we're going to make it super, super clear on the website that you have, you know, so much education and experience and all of that. But you're not going to be able to serve clients if you don't make this change. And sometimes it does take, you know, having to describe your business a little bit differently than maybe you originally would have wanted to. But I always find that there's ways to make it work. You can still talk about yourself the way you want to talk about yourself. It's just getting creative and figuring out how to work those more common keywords into your website as well.
So the keyword search, then what would be like kind of the next step?
Yeah, so once you have sort of a list of keywords that you've got, you'd researched, you found ones that, you know, a good amount of people are searching for them, and they're not, you know, super crazy competitive, and especially that they're very relevant to your business. You don't want to search for keywords or use keywords that have tons of search volume if they're not highly relevant to your business, because all that's going to give you is vanity traffic. So it might give you traffic, but it's not traffic that matters, because it's not actually people that truly want what you're offering and that are going to spend their money with you. So making sure that they're really relevant is important. And then it's just a matter of literally updating your website. So a lot of times people get overwhelmed by this because they think it's going to require them to completely rewrite their website, and it's not at all. What I recommend people do as a basic first step that you can do is find places on your website where you can be more specific. So for example, if you ever find a place on your website where you're just talking about your services, like you're using the word services, that's a really simple place to get more specific and get a keyword in there. So at car detailing services, again, I know nothing about cars, so I apologize for not
You're killing it. I'm ready to hire you.
Or, you know, your local area, New Hampshire detailing services, just getting more specific and getting that keyword or phrase into your website more often is a super simple way to start using keywords. And again, you're not completely rewriting that sentence or that paragraph or that page. You're just finding places where you can take vague terms that you've used and make them more specific and get those keywords in. So doing that with all of your on-page content on your website is a great place to start. There's definitely things you should be looking at on more of like the back-end admin side of your website. I don't know if I want to get too crazy technical, but one of the simplest things that pretty much anybody should be able to do as long as you have access to like the admin side of your website is to update what's called the meta title and the meta description. So this is, I'm sure everybody listening has been to Google and searched for something. And so you all know that when you search for something, it pops up, it shows a title, it shows the URL, and then it shows a little blurb of text. And so that's what that is. The title is the meta title. The little blurb is your meta description. And every page of your website, every blog post of your website has a meta title and a meta description. And these are really, really important places to use those keywords that you've researched. So making sure that your titles, you know, have your primary keyword that you're wanting to rank for. So if you're an auto body shop in Manchester, New Hampshire, that your homepage title is auto body shop in Manchester, New Hampshire with your business name. And that your meta description, you know, has at least that primary keyword in there, maybe some other related ones, and a clear call to action, like, you know, looking for an auto body shop in Manchester, New Hampshire, click here to visit, you know, A1 Auto Body, blah, blah, blah. and doing that simple change can help a lot. Because one, search bots pay attention to the keywords that are in those two spots, and two, humans pay attention to them too. They're what help people decide which links to click on when they see your website in a search result.
I'm curious. I feel like people use the word search engine optimization, but really what they mean is Google optimization, right?
Like, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because, yeah, I mean, when you read anything about SEO or you talk to any person who does SEO, we're always going to be talking about Google. And the fact of the matter is none of the search engines are that different in terms of how they determine rank. So by focusing on Google's algorithms and what matters to Google, you're going to just naturally do well on the other platforms as well.
That's what I was going to ask, was if like there's anything specific you need to do for like Bing or DuckDuckGo or anything.
No, in my experience, when people start improving their ranking in Google, they see their ranking go up in those other search engines as well.
Well, they probably don't see it because they're not checking. But
well,
and so then, I guess I'm very curious. How did you like kind of get into this? Like, how did you get started doing this?
That's a good question, and I enjoy telling the story. So my original professional background is in journalism. That's what I went to college for. And I've always been a writer and enjoyed writing. And so when I was in college, I was like, well, I can't just be an English major. I need a clear career path. So I chose journalism because I felt like, there, now I have a job. which worked for a few years, and then I quickly realized it was not really the field for me, and so I went into marketing because I figured, you know, I can write, I can communicate, I can totally market, and I was able to convince someone to hire me even though I had no experience, and I started learning about SEO a little bit through my work there. They did like a corporate training on SEO one time for the whole marketing staff, and I really didn't pay much attention to it at the time. And then a couple years later, I started a blog. Like many people who dream of breaking free of the corporate world and like rich, I was convinced that this blog was going to be my ticket out, my cubicle. It was not, but
I also at one point had a blog, so I know the feeling. I have this podcast, which is actually my real golden ticket out. I'm convinced. Give me, 12, 15 more years and I'm going to be.
It totally could be. Podcasters, right? But yeah, so I have this blog and it was like on health and nutrition and recipe blog, like everybody else's. And I used to make up these recipes and I would just call them random, like fun, cutesy names, like Danielle's special chicken pasta or whatever. And like my mom read it and my grandmother read it and like that was nice, but that was about it. And then one day I made this recipe for chicken tikka masala made in the Instant Pot. If you don't have an Instant Pot, get one. And it was like this very complex recipe. And when I was done with the recipe, I couldn't think of a creative name. And so I literally called it Instant Pot Chicken Tikka Masala. And I put it on my website. And I didn't look at my website for a couple weeks because I was not a great blogger. And I went back to my website and I suddenly had all kinds of traffic. I actually thought that my website was broken because I was like, there's no way that this many people are looking at my website. And when I looked at the data more closely, it was all to that one article, that one recipe. And it sort of hit me like, oh my gosh, this is what they were talking about in that training I wasn't really paying attention to. And so like by just coming up with a very boring recipe title, I had like tapped into the power of SEO because nobody was online searching for Danielle's spicy chicken. But they were online searching for Instant Pot Chicken Tikka Masala recipes. And I still, this is a fun fact, I still to this day get random Facebook messages from people being like, were you the person who used to have the blog that had the chicken tikka masala recipe? Because it's just not available on the internet anymore. And people literally will message me for that recipe. And I will email it to them.
That's amazing. Why did you take it down? You should sell a cookbook that's just that recipe.
That would be cool. Yeah. I should just sell the recipe for like $2 and I'll make a little bit of money.
No, you should make a super decadent book. Like it should just be like a whole book. And then it can be set up like a blog. Like it'll have like your whole life story in the beginning.
Oh, yes.
And then like somewhere in the middle.
Last page.
Will be the recipe, but then like have like 10 pages of like ads afterwards.
Yeah, and comments of people being like, can I use coconut butter instead of coconut oil?
other chicken tiki masala recipes you might like.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So that was a very long-winded story, but.
That was great. So that's how you got. So that was like your first.
So that time. Was like the turning point is when I realized how important it actually is. And it wasn't long after that I ended up getting a new job and going to work for my uncle's company, which was an e-commerce company. And they, part of my interview with them, they were saying, do you know anything about SEO? Because this is something we're working on already. And we really need, our marketing person to, be aware of this and to be focused on this. And I was like, well, it just so happens I have a top ranking recipe on Google. And so when I went to work with them, that's when I really started to dive more into the world of SEO. I mean, they were making over $1 million and about 60% of our revenue was coming from organic search traffic. It was an insane amount. We had a very low marketing budget. We spent like maybe $1,000 a month, which I know I recognize for some businesses that may sound like a lot. It was not what I was used to coming from a more corporate environment. And so we really relied on that organic search traffic. And I mean, still to this day, I know because it's my uncle's company that they rely on organic search traffic so much for their business. And it has just grown tremendously over the last 6 or 7 years since he started it.
I can tell you from personal experience that like we at the shop spend $0 on marketing,
mm-hmm.
$0. We didn't, I occasionally will spend
a little bit of money marketing either like a podcast episode, like where I do a paid promotion or something, but just a very inexpensive. I've probably spent, since I started our Instagram, I probably spent like less than $100.
Yeah.
Which, so like 3 years, $100 or so. And we have gotten more business from Instagram than any other channel of marketing we've ever attempted to use.
Yeah.
Like, not even close. Like, literally the other ones didn't even seem to work.
Yeah, it's that organic traffic, whether it's organically coming from social media or from search engines, it honestly works so much better than ads. I feel like our generation, or just people in general these days, we're sort of blind to ads. We're so used to being constantly bombarded by advertisements online that we just don't pay attention to them anymore. And so when you can reach someone organically by engaging them on Instagram, or, you know, finding them where they already are when they're already searching for you in a search engine, it's so much more powerful.
I don't know. There is actually a wicked interesting study where on pretty much all websites, I'm probably going to mess this up, so just bear with me. But all websites, like when Google AdSense first came out,
mm-hmm.
they run banner ads on the bottom. I can't remember if it's the right or left-hand side of the screen. There was always an ad that was always – it was like on every website, there was always this ad on the bottom, either left or right-hand side. And they actually did a study, and no matter what was on that side, no one could recollect it. It was almost as if, like, they were blind there.
Wow.
Like, their brain just completely wrote it off as if it didn't even exist.
Yeah, I've definitely read stuff like that too.
Which is crazy to think, like, that you're, like, we're so, like, fire hosed constantly with advertisers that, like, our brain just completely tunes it out. And, like, we have to keep figuring out new ways to, like, advertise to people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's true. And, I mean, I think the same goes even – probably not to quite that extent, but a lot of times when I'm working with people, they ask if I use Google Ads, which I don't. I'm solely focused on organic search engine optimization. And it's similar. I mean, I know I do this on Google. I know which listings are ads. I scroll past any of those ads at the top, and I go straight to the organic listings. And I think a lot of other people do that too. And that's why I always tell people, like, ads, Google Ads can work well, and they can especially work if your website's brand new and you just need sort of like an initial boost to try to get a little bit of traffic going to your site. But in general, I always recommend that people first focus most of their attention on that organic traffic because, yeah, people just trust it more.
Well, the thing that like killed the Google ads is they have to mark them as ads now, and they didn't.
Yeah.
It used to just be like they would appear at the top, and now they have to have the ad tag next to them.
Exactly. Yep.
And that basically killed any use you could get out of the Google ads.
Yeah. Yep. People see ad and they're like, well, someone paid to be here. Like, I'm going to go to a website that like earned their spot, or that, you know, someone else is vouching for because they have good reviews or whatever it may be.
Well, I think that the area that we're in now is so cool because, like, advertising, like, I hate to think of myself as, like our Instagram, our Facebook, as, like, advertising. Because, like, I love meeting and talking to people. And, like, I've made legitimate friends, like, through our website. Or, like, I talk to people, you know, all the time who I just really enjoy that. Like, I don't think of it as, like, I'm not on there, like, oh, I bet you this one's going to get, you know, I bet you this picture's going to get, you know, so much work or whatever. Like, I just think of it at this point as just, like, I'm having a conversation with all these people who are pretty much my friends at this point, you know?
Yeah.
And it completely, levels the playing field between, like, the normal small business and, like, Target or Walmart or, like, any other billion-dollar corporation who, like, 15 years ago we could never have competed with.
Yes. I love that. And I always talk about SEO the exact same way. I literally use the same phrase, like, level the playing field, because it's really true. A lot of times, you know, I'll work with people who say like, well, should I even bother trying because I have this competitor who's this, you know, national chain or this company that's been around for 50 years or whatever it is. And I tell them like the rules are the same for everyone. It does not matter who you are, how long you've been around, how much money you have. That does not matter. The rules of ranking and search are the same for everyone. And so you, one solo person running a tiny business or, you know, whatever your situation is, has the exact same chance to rank as a bigger corporation. And yes, they have more resources. They create more content and, you know, hire a bunch of consultants and all of that. But you can absolutely get your content to rank more highly on Google because the rules are the same. And I love that about it. One of my favorite things about it is because you can help the little guy, you know, compete against the big guys.
I would actually, I don't know a whole bunch about SEO, but I do know about like social media. Mm-hmm. And that is like, you actually have the advantage as the little guy because you don't have any red tape to go jump through.
Mm-hmm.
When I make a piece of content, I go and do it. I don't check with anybody. I don't ask for permission. I don't have, you know, to send it to a board. I don't have to run it through a marketing panel. Like, I just do it. And it actually gives you a massive advantage over a lot of, like, companies where there's a lot of bureaucratic red tape.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
They might have access to CGI or Kevin Bacon, right? But, like, I can put out, you know, 2,000 pieces of content by the time that they make that one.
Mm-hmm.
And if that one doesn't, if their one doesn't hit, well, hopefully one of my 2,000 did, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I think that, you know, much like consumers today are aware of ads and sort of ignore them, I think they're also sort of, they've sort of become more savvy in terms of wanting to engage with brands that seem genuine and authentic versus just selling to them all the time. And I think that's an advantage that smaller businesses have as well. I think you can, you know, position yourself as an actual human, and that goes a long way.
Or presenting yourself as a robot, which could be cool, which
that
might be
really cool.
It's working for Zuckerberg, so.
It really is working for him.
What was it like transferring from like working for somebody doing this to working at home?
Oh, it was so good. No, it really was. So it's funny because I've always had like that entrepreneurial spirit that you hear people talking about, but I really have, like, as a kid, I was always coming up with random business ideas and like schemes to make money and sell stuff. But I just sort of like, I don't know, I didn't view it as a realistic path. I didn't have anyone in my life that was an entrepreneur. I literally, like, I can't think of anyone that I was around as a kid who had their own business. And so it just didn't seem like a real thing that I could do. And so I sort of was just like, no, I'm just going to go to college and get a job and, you know, move up the ranks and do all the things that you're supposed to do. But I never enjoyed it. I would always get really tired of my jobs pretty quickly. I sort of had like a 2-year time limit that I could stay at a job before I just kind of hated it. And I remember finally when I was working with my uncle, of course I loved my uncle and I loved the people I was working with, but I was still finding myself feeling the same way. And I was talking to my husband about it and he was like, did you ever think of the fact that maybe you just don't like having a boss? And I was like, oh yeah, I really don't. I really don't like having a boss. Like I would find myself, my boss would tell me to do something and I'd find myself being like, who are you to tell me what to do? And then I'd be like, oh, right, you're my boss. I never loved that environment. And then when I had my son, I hated being at the office 40, 50 hours a week and only seeing him like on the weekends, basically. And so I made that decision to, you know, start my own thing and really go for it. And so by the time I actually got to the point where I left my 9-to-5, I was so ready. It felt like a pretty easy transition for me because it just felt like doing what I was meant to do the whole time. And I love working with myself. I enjoy, you know, being around other people and talking to other people, but I have made such an amazing community for myself online and with local friends as well, who are also entrepreneurs, who I feel like I don't feel alone, even though I'm doing it alone.
Well, that's kind of the weird, that's kind of the weird part about owning a business, right? Is like, you are, at the end of the day, like, you're it.
Yeah.
You know? But like, you still can't do it by yourself.
Right.
So like, you have all the responsibility,
mm-hmm.
none of the benefits of like being past the buck. So really, when you look at it like that, maybe you should just get a normal job.
Living the dream. No. I said to my husband recently, I was like, I have to find a way to make this work forever. I cannot go back to a normal job. I will not go back to a normal job. I'm like, I just can't. It's just so, I don't know. I would sit in my cubicle and I would be like, okay, I'm enjoying the work. The work itself I enjoy, but being here, having to be here at certain times of day and like not feeling like I have control over my own schedule and my own life, it just feels so wrong for my like personality and just what I want out of my life. And so, yeah, I'm gonna find a way to make it work forever.
And how long did it take you from being like, from like first deciding like, all right, I'm going to start this as like maybe like a little side thing mm-hmm. and see what happens, to I'm no longer working for someone else. I'm only working for myself.
Yeah, it was about like 7 or 8 months. I think it about that. So it was at the end of June of 2018 that I, funny, we were talking about ads. I actually, for once in my life, clicked on a Facebook ad that was a webinar about like building a freelancing business. And I had already had this idea in my head. I had done a little bit of freelance writing.
Of course you had thought about it, or you wouldn't have gotten a Facebook ad.
Well, exactly. They knew what I was probably like Googling how to make money from home while crying, while like laying in bed one night or something. Seems like something I would have been doing at the time. But so I clicked on this ad and it was for this woman who had a program that basically taught you like the logistics of starting a freelance business. And I'd already had the idea. I've been doing a little bit of freelance writing basically since my journalism days. So I knew that I could do it, but I felt like I needed the structure of someone like teaching me what to do to actually make myself do it. So I signed up for this program. It was a 12-week program. So that was the end of June. I had my first client in August, my second client in September. By December, I had not replaced my 9-to-5 income or matched my 9-to-5 income, but I was probably like 60% of the way there and was feeling like I was probably close to being able to leave. And then I officially left my 9-to-5 March 1st of 2019. So it was about 7 or 8 months. I can't count that quickly in my head, but it was less than a year.
That must have been a weird trend, or like, because you, that kind of period of time, like you have, like you have these 40 hours a week at least that are like all tied up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, you know that once you can start dedicating whatever time you're doing now plus that 40 hours, like once you can do, once you have that extra 40 hours to play around with, like, you know, you're going to be able to make more money. Like, you know, you're going to be able to do things better. So it's must have been difficult to kind of gauge like, okay, so like how much is that really worth? You know what I mean? Like that 40%,
yeah.
I can cover that gap when I have these extra 40 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. It was very hard for me. And I had the added layer of working for a family, my family's company. And I just, there was so much holding me back from just jumping in and going for it full time. I had sort of figured out that I felt, you know, I felt like when my husband and I sat down and we looked at our budget and we figured out, okay, we can pay all of our bills on what I'm making right now. It would be tight, but we can. And so I'm going to, you know, put in my notice soon. And then ended up having a conversation with my boss at the time and that was basically talking about my future with the company, and I was like, I can't have this conversation genuinely, so I'm just going to give you my notice right now. So that was an interesting day, but and then I had to text my husband and be like, so I just put in my notice. Sorry. But luckily he was on board. He had been pushing me for months to just do it. So, but yeah, it was definitely, it was scary, for sure. But really within probably the first month or two after I went full time with my business, I had replaced the rest of that salary. So I just needed that time because I was working like 4 in the morning until I went to work, and working on my lunch breaks, working in the evenings. I was had my toddler. I was pregnant. It was a really terrible year in a lot of ways.
Well, that explains why you were in bed crying.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so you were pregnant and you had your toddler at the time. So that's an even, I mean, that was a risk that you took. That was a big.
It was really scary. There was definitely, there were the first couple months after I left, I definitely had days where I would panic and be like, oh my God, what have I done? I left this really great job with a really solid future. To what? Like, just work for myself? I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't boss myself around. but yeah, I mean, now almost 2 years since then, actually just a couple of months until it's 2 years, which is crazy. It's just like so clearly was the right decision for me, especially, I mean, I've been so lucky with all of the craziness going on that I've been able to, you know, take care of my kids still and also still have the business. And it's just been like a very, as much as things have been crazy, I'm also super grateful that I have that ability.
Is it difficult for you to market yourself? Like, obviously, your job is marketing other people and figuring out, you know, kind of who you're targeting and that kind of thing. Is it hard for you to kind of turn around and reflect that kind of lens back on yourself ever?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's gotten easier over time. I've always been sort of the kind of person that feels awkward, like, saying nice things about myself. or, you know, would get embarrassed when people would, like, say nice things about you. And so it definitely had to fight against that a little bit at the beginning, just feeling awkward, like I was acting like, oh, look at me, I'm the best, like, come work with me. But when I started working with more clients and really started seeing the results that they were having, it gave me that confidence to say, like, I am actually legitimately helping these people, and I want to help as many people as I can. And so I really, at the end of the day, I have, like, I have to do this. I have to share this with other people. It's like a duty to make sure that other small businesses, you know, have this tool, search engine optimization, on their side or to their advantage. And so when I started thinking about it that way, it became easier to market myself and my business.
What was your best story? And you don't have to give their name if you don't want to or anything, but like what's like the most successful situation you've had, or like the one you're most proud of?
I think the one that I think of, well,
is it the colon lady?
Well, she is a good one. The other one that I like to tell a story about is she is an organic lawn care. She has an organic lawn care company. And she, when she started working with me, it was 2019. Yeah, it was actually, she was one of the first clients I got after I went full-time in my business. And she had come to me and said, she found me on Instagram, actually. and she came to me and was like, you know, I do okay. I get some search traffic, but I have these 3 competitors who are constantly beating me out above me. And I just really feel like if I could be, you know, ranking number 1 on Google for this sort of service, that I would be able to do so much better. So I did like an audit of her site, and we completely, you know, revamped, updated her content with all these new keywords that we had researched. And Within a few months, she was seeing a lot more traffic. She was getting a lot more business. Since we've been working together, she had to add a new member to her team because she was getting so much more business. And she actually just, I think it was in August, she sent me an email and was like, is there any way to just temporarily take the contact form off our website because I'm literally getting too many leads and I can't take any more clients right now? And we were laughing about it because we were like, okay, less than, you know, a year and a half ago, you were feeling like you didn't have enough business and now you're trying to find a way to shut off your contact form. Too much business. And so that, I mean, that's obviously a big success story. And I just love working with her. And like I mentioned at the beginning, that sort of business, that, you know, small service-based local business is just my favorite kind of business to work with because they really can have that sort of like business transforming success.
That's awesome. Well, what's the name of that company?
Yeah, Complete Land Organics is the name of the company. They're based here in New Hampshire.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so I got one more question for you. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
If you could, you had a magic wand and you could get the contract to any business or any company to handle all of their SEO or their copywriting, what company would you like to do?
All right, this is a tough one because I fangirl over a lot of different companies. I think, though, that I would have to go with Ben & Jerry's.
Ooh. That is a good one.
Reasons.
Why?
Well, one, the ice cream. I imagine I would get, you know, holiday gifts of ice cream. So that perk alone is one of the benefits. But I also just really love, you know, what they do as a brand. They're really environmentally conscious, which is something that I really care about. They really use their platform to try to make change and to, you know, talk about social justice and the environment and all of these different things. And I just love when businesses have values and are not afraid to show them, whatever those values may be. I just think it's really cool when a business is not afraid to sort of tell you what they stand for. And I just think they would be such a cool company to work with. And I would love to eat lots of their ice cream.
What's your favorite kind of ice cream from them?
Okay. That's a good question. I really love a fairly new flavor of theirs called Netflix and Chilled.
Oh, so good.
It's so good.
Two of them, right? Wasn't there Netflix and...
Yeah.
It was like a signature series. I'm a super ice cream fucking weirdo. So, like, I could literally talk about ice cream with you for the next hour if you want.
Oh, yeah. We had Jenny's ice cream.
Jenny's? No. Tell me.
You need to try it immediately. You can get boxes of ice cream mailed to your house, but you can also usually find it at least Whole Foods, sometimes other grocery stores. It's so, so good. And the best one is called Gooey Butter Cake, and it's cream cheese ice cream with, like, gooey butter cake mixed into it. It's so good.
I think you said gooey butter pig. I was like, I'll try it, but that does not sound appetizing. I'll definitely try that. There's been a bunch of new ice cream companies that came out recently, like in the last couple of years. There's just like, because it used to just be like Haagen-Dazs and Ben & Jerry's were like the two pint makers.
Right.
But now there's like Talenti.
Yep.
There's this other one called Nyx,
which
isn't run by me. It's just that we just happen to have the same name. And there's like three or four now that And I'm like, whoa, like, they're totally moving in on Ben & Jerry's space. Did you try the new cannoli ice cream by Ben & Jerry's?
I have not had that one yet.
Oh, my God. Go try that.
I'm going to have to. I can get it delivered to my house with Uber Eats, so.
It's fucking unbelievable.
I could do it right now.
It's so good. It's, like, limited edition, so, like, the fat kid in me, like, every time I go to the store, if I see it, I have to buy it.
Gotta stock up.
I see it, and, like, I literally, like, I get stars in my eyes, and, like, I get excited. Like, I start drooling.
Oh, my goodness.
If I'm at Walmart, I gotta buy a spoon to eat it on the way home.
Uh.
I'm not. I'll tell you one quick story. One time, it was. I don't even remember why I did this, but a bunch of us went to Walmart, and like for some reason we were just feeling weird. I don't know, but we decided we were gonna like have this contest where we would all eat like ice cream, like a pint of ice cream without using our hands. So there was four of us. Like, I don't know what I picked, like, the worst flavor, because I picked, I don't know if you know what fish food is.
Oh, I love fish food.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, Party. Literally, like, half of it is, like, marshmallow and caramel and chocolate. So,
yeah.
Like, by the time I got done, I was literally fucking covered. Fucking ice cream. Like, we all were. We had, like, because the way you had to do it was you had to, like, smash, like, the container down as you went so that you could get more of the ice cream. So like we were like headbutting these containers, like breaking them down. But yeah, I ended up with marshmallow like covering my whole body pretty much. It was
I have to know, maybe I missed this, was this like in high school or like last week?
This is after high school. But before I had a child.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
I was probably like 22. Like I was definitely old enough that this was weird to do, but young enough that I didn't care. Me and a couple of my other friends used to do weird eating challenges like this all the time. Like one time we bought like a case of corn dogs to see who could eat the most corn dogs.
Oh my gosh.
And like we did the gallon challenge.
Oh gosh.
Milk in an hour. There were a couple other weird ones that we did. But anyways, yeah. I don't know why we did that. We all worked out a lot and stuff, so like we would just do these very weird cheat days where we would all get together and do this.
That sounds really fun. I might work out more just so I can do that.
I mean, I still eat like that and now I don't work out, so you don't need to be guilted into working out. Don't worry about it. All right. Well, Danielle, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
And I hope you have a wonderful night. And, where can people reach you?
Oh, yeah. So you can find me where I'm most active is Instagram. So I'm my business name is Elevate Virtual Marketing. So on Instagram, I'm Elevate_marketing. Probably soon to be changing, but you should still be able to find me that way. And my business website is ElevateVirtualMarketing.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I hope you have a wonderful night.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for checking out the show. I hope you really enjoyed it. If you could do me a favor and just go give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast, I would really appreciate it. Thank you again. I hope you guys all have a wonderful day.